Yo, what's up? Welcome to Kinda Funny Games Daily for Friday, January 10th, 2020. I'm one of your hosts, Blessing, Adioye Jr. And joining me, we got Tim, motherfucking Geddes. Tim,
what's up, bitches? Yo, closing out a big week of first here. This is the first time you in the hosting chair, me over here.
Yeah,
exciting stuff. You doing all 5 days of Games Daily? I saw that, I'm so sorry, I forgot the name of the person that did the big Kinda Funny Games Daily stat post from yesterday.
Yeah,
it's on Reddit.
Yep.
I was reading through that last night. I always love looking at that. You had 9 shows on you, but this is number 10, man.
Yeah, dude. It feels crazy to be on this show this long.
Yeah?
You know? Yeah. But yeah, it's exciting. Exciting stuff. How are you doing today?
I'm doing fantastic. There's one minor thing that I want to talk about that's not games related.
Really?
That's going on in my life. And it's a little nasty, but I need you all to
understand
and my pains right now, right?
All right, let's just give him this. We're all friends here.
Yeah. I'm going into it's not that type of nasty. Okay. It's not that trust me. Like this is some weird stuff. I have to do eye surgery in a couple weeks to fix the problem that's been going on with my eyes since about June.
So you got to
all remember.
I'm gonna miss the glasses.
No.
No. Okay.
No, you're not.
I like them.
No. No.
I think they work.
They're your thing. They're Greg's thing. They can't be my thing too. So here's the problem. I have to do this pre-operation. I have to do these eye drops every 4 hours that I'm awake for like 2 weeks. It's ridiculous. But something they don't tell you about eye drops. Is that your eyes are connected to your nasal. Your nasal is connected to your mouth and throat.
Oh.
So I taste it right now.
Oh.
And it tastes like someone took hairspray and just sprayed it into my mouth. It doesn't taste edible. Anyways, what's up? Kinda Funny Games Daily.
Tasting things through your eyes.
Yeah, man. That's where I'm at this beautiful Friday,
what's
January 10th.
What's the life that Tim lives?
Can I tell you something that happened to me the other day?
Yes, you can.
So after a full day of work here, went to my car, saw that the side of my car had been scraped because I park on the street here. And I was like looking at it. I was like touching it. I was like, I can't believe somebody scraped my car. And I was like, whatever, man. I go to open my front door. Somebody's sitting in my seat. Somebody's sitting in my car. And then I looked and I realized it wasn't my car.
Welcome to San Francisco, man. The amount of times that happens.
I was very confused for a good 10 seconds because I was like, I went from being pissed at somebody of somebody scraping my car to then like being scared that somebody else is sitting in my front seat to then realizing like, oh no, this is just the same type of car I own. This isn't actually my car. Oh, and I almost opened the door and it was a lady and I almost turned into that one joke that Nick tells at every single stand up.
Like
who should be more scared, her or me?
So funny, man.
Yeah, dude.
I love it.
Of course, today's stories include Xbox not launching with exclusives, the DICE Awards, and more, because this is Kinda Funny Games Daily each and every weekday right here at 10 a.m. live on twitch.tv/kindafunnygames. If you're watching live, you can correct us when we get stuff wrong by going to kindafunny.com/you'rewrong. If you don't want to watch us live, you can watch later on youtube.com/kindafunnygames or listen later on podcast services around the globe by searching for Kinda Funny Games Daily. To be part of the show, head to patreon.com/kindafunnygames, or bronze members or above get to write in, and silver members or above get the show ad free.
Real quick, just to cut you off here, I went into the You're Wrong. Katie coming through quick with the Kabaloo is the person on Reddit who did the awesome stats.
There you go. Shout out
to Kabaloo.
Thank you so much. Now it's time for some housekeeping. Thank you to our Patreon producers, Blackjack and Muhammad. Today we're brought to you by Mint Mobile, but I'll tell you about that later. For now, let's begin with what is and forever will be the Roper Report. You did it to Kevin, so I'm going to do it to Barrett.
Nah, see, once he runs out, when you have to take that second breath.
I just want to see how long. It's time for some news. We have 5 stories today.
A big guest!
Starting with some Xbox news. Xbox Series X is number 1. Exclusive games from Xbox Game Studios will start coming 1 year after launch. This comes from Francesco DeMio over at WCCF Tech. The Xbox Series X is releasing later this year, but it seems like it will take longer to see next-gen exclusive titles from Xbox Game Studios. Speaking with MCV, Xbox Game Studios head Matt Booty confirmed that all games coming from the studios over this year and next will be cross-gen titles. This will allow those who invest in an Xbox console between now and the Xbox Series X release to feel like they have made a good investment. Quote, as our content comes out over the next year, 2 years, all of our games, sort of like PC, will play up and down that family of devices. We want to make sure that if someone invests in Xbox between now and Series X, that they feel that they've made a good investment and that we're committed to them with content, end quote. While there won't be Xbox Series X exclusive games at launch, Microsoft will still make sure to showcase the console's power and features with select franchises like Halo. Quote, our approach is to pick one or two IP that we're going to focus on and make sure that they're there at launch of the console, taking advantage of all the features. And for us, that's going to be Halo Infinite, which is a big opportunity. It's the first time in over 15 years that we'll have a Halo title launching in sync with a new console. And that team is definitely going to be doing things to take advantage of Series X, end quote. The Xbox Series X launches later this year worldwide. Tim.
So they've already kind of announced this. I mean, I even feel like they announced this before they even really officially announced Series X. Mm-hmm. Back at E3 2-3 years ago, when they were talking about the future of Xbox, they're talking about the Xbox ecosystem and how they were really focusing on everything being able to be played, the Play Anywhere thing, right? Whether it's PC or an Xbox platform.
Yeah.
Things change, obviously, as years go on and as the industry kind of advances and shifts. But I am not surprised by this. I don't think that it's that dire of a situation as I feel like some people want to twist this into being of like, why would I want to get the new Xbox if my old one already plays it? The answer is clear. People want the new shiny thing.
Yeah.
And the new shiny thing is going to be showing off the crown jewel of the Xbox ecosystem, Halo, in the best way we've seen yet. I think that this is indicative of what we're kind of going to be getting next generation. When a console generation happens, there's you know, the law of diminishing returns at some point where the features that you're getting out of it are not going to be apparent just straight up looking at the game. It's going to be more loading. You know, it's going to be more quality of life. It's going to be more just kind of the subtle, like the lighting and ray tracing and all the fun stuff, right?
Yeah.
But that stuff that I don't think is going to be, you know, look at this screenshot versus this screenshot of Mario 64 versus Mario Sunshine, you know, versus Mario Odyssey. And you're able to be like, oh, I see the difference, right?
Yeah. I think for me, this is indicative of Microsoft not necessarily wanting to compete with PlayStation as head-on as they have for years, you know, for the last few console generations. I think this is interesting because, like, if you look at this through the lens of Xbox versus PlayStation, this feels like a very weird move, right? Because PlayStation 5, they're going to launch with, I imagine, with an exclusive title for you, right? Or at least in the first couple of years, there are going to be exclusive titles for the PlayStation. Mm-hmm. Like, we're predicting games like Horizon Zero Dawn 2 or Spider-Man 2, right? Like, we will likely see PlayStation exclusives that come out for PS5 that won't be out for PS4. They can only play on PS5. And those will be the exclusives that sell that console. Whereas Xbox, not doing that feels weird, but I think, given like all the conversations we've had this week across KOGD and PS I Love You XOXO, I feel like the more you look at Xbox's or Microsoft's strategy going into Xbox Series X, I feel like it's becoming more and more proven that their strategy is less so, hey, Xbox going forward is going to be this box, and it's more so Xbox going forward is a brand, it's an ecosystem, right? And they're doing whatever they can to get you into that ecosystem without necessarily worrying about selling Xbox Series X specifically. Xbox Series X is coming out as a part of that brand, and it's going to be
an incentive.
An incentive, yeah.
You know, it's something they want to come out and be like, we have the most powerful console if you want to be able to play your third-party games or these awesome first-party titles. Mm-hmm. Or if you're just interested, that's what Game Pass is for. And I feel like that is when we talk about the Xbox ecosystem, we're talking about Game Pass. We're talking about xCloud. And they've been building the foundation for this for the last couple of years now. Mm-hmm. And they just want you to play Halo. They don't care where you play
like,
Halo.
If you play, and you know, this is far thinking, or maybe not too far thinking, but like, you know, Xbox on Switch. Right? Mm-hmm. That is the thing that, you know, there's a chance that could happen in the future.
I guarantee the conversations have happened.
Yeah.
Where they're at with that conversation, where the technical feasibility of it, Nintendo's resistance to it or acceptance of it, like, we don't know. There's so much up in the air there, but I guarantee those conversations have at least started.
Yeah, and I mean, something that's already happened, right? Xbox on PC. I don't think Microsoft cares if you're playing Halo on PC or Halo on Xbox.
Because if you're paying for a subscription service, and if they get you and they keep enticing you and giving you more and more reasons to stay there, and the best reason to want to stay there is investing in this expensive box that you have that you want to stay in, right?
Yeah.
So that's why I think it's important that they still come out with this system, because it can't just be a subscription service, or else you don't feel loyalty to that in the same way that you would this giant investment.
Mm-hmm. The only reason I see this as weird is because I feel like they could get away with, you know, launching Halo Infinite and launching Xbox exclusives not on the Xbox One and nobody would complain. Could
they get away with it? Like, that would just be normal. Like, yeah, that would just be, you know, totally understood. But guess what? This means way more of a player base, way more like day one community. And that's what they're trying to go for. A key pillar of Halo is multiplayer and the multiplayer community built around it. And I feel like they have struggled to really own that since some of the earlier Halo titles. Like, I don't know that we'll ever be able to rekindle the magic of Halo 2 online, but I think that was just because it was such an early online console game. But I think that things have changed so much with Call of Duty, with, you know, even Grand Theft Auto Online, with how online has changed, Destiny, all these like always online games, right? That Halo can come back and take its place as king of that type of shooter, right?
Yeah.
And you want the most people playing it as possible. There's downsides to this. This means that in the same way that when a game comes out multi-plat for Xbox and PlayStation, it's not going to have the same level of detail and care as an exclusive, because exclusives are being built from the ground up for this one single console. So the bugs only need to be tested in one vertical, not two, three, four verticals. And now we are entering a world where even within one system, we're going to have that issue. But games have been moving more and more towards being made as PC games, and also the systems are being
the
more,
boxes
and more
are more and more like
PCs.
Yeah, that's interesting. But yeah, this I think this is going to be a good move, I'm going to say, going forward. Like, for them establishing what they want Xbox to be, I think this is going to be, this is a good move in terms of messaging that and really actually committing to that, right? Because they could be all about the talk and not about the walk, and they could say that, like, yeah, we want Xbox to be a brand, we want Xbox to be an ecosystem, but they could still be like, okay, but Xbox Series X isn't necessarily going to be tied to Xbox One in the way that it looks like they are tying everything together to kind of play with each other and be more, I guess, more of a family of consoles than, you know, the Xbox One family, the Series family.
We had an amazing moment yesterday. We were playing Spider-Man, and I was trying to get my first Platinum Trophy. You can watch the video, youtube.com/kindoffunnygames right now. But we were on Twitch, and as we were playing it, you were blown away.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
You can see in the video, you're like, oh my God, this looks incredible. I didn't know this game could look this good, because you played it on a PS4 on
my base 1080, PS4 on a 1080p TV.
And we were playing it at PS4 Pro, HDR, 4K, all the stuff, right? On a 4K TV. And it just looked so much better to you. I think that it's that moment that people need to have over and over and over to realize that, like, oh, I could keep playing this on my Xbox One S. But then there's also the Series X. But if they want to just go somewhere in between, they have the option of the Xbox One X. A couple days ago on Games Daily, we were talking about how many SKUs can Xbox launch with? How many should they launch with? And I think that this is a perfect example of maybe they aren't going to launch with a lesser version to start off, because they already have
Because
those.
The Xbox One is the...
Right? Yeah. We're all assuming it's going to be at launch, but what if it wasn't? What if they just, like, Series X comes out in November and the Series S doesn't come out until March?
And I do, and I think this was actually a question that somebody wrote in, and I can't remember if we talked about this on the post show or if we talked about this on KFGD proper, but somebody did, like, write in and say, like, what if the Xbox One is the, or Xbox One X is the, you know, the lesser version that we're talking about?
The problem with that is that the naming conventions, I think that's where the Xbox branding becomes overly complicated, having the Series X and the Xbox One X, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Because they never want the X to be associated with weakness. They want the X to be associated with power.
And you can't really go back and, like, you can change the box. Even that would be difficult to do, the you know, the cardboard box. And I guess the Xbox One X doesn't have that branding on the console itself.
I don't know.
Right?
I don't have
you're
an
on
Xbox
me,
One X.
You're, oh, but. You're on me. Dude, it's such a beautiful little baby.
Oh, yeah.
I can't. Woo, love it. All this is very exciting stuff, man. I love that we're leading into a generation that, like, we've never seen before. And, like, earlier you were talking about PlayStation launches, and I know that we've talked a lot about this recently, but I wonder if PlayStation is going to launch with a banger, you know?
Like,
or it's
exclusive?
Just going to be its normal third-party kind of, like, fair, where it's like the Call of Duties and Assassin's Creed.
I'm very curious on what the launch lineups for both of the consoles are going to look like, and, like, how they compare to each other. Because, like, we know Hellblade 2 is coming out for Xbox at a certain point. I don't think we know that it's a launch title or not, but I assume that'll
be... I kind of doubt it's going to.
Yeah, I kind of doubt that, too. But I'm curious to see what it's going to be. Because, like, for PlayStation, right, I think the prediction is Horizon 2, And was it me and you that were talking about like Spider-Man 2 or mm-hmm. how the first year of the PlayStation you think is going to be like a banger year? And I'm like, I think they'll have like one or two exclusives, but I don't know if it's going to be that big of a banger year, but we'll see. I wonder how that's going to look against Xboxes, because Xbox, I could see it being way more of a banger year because they have been acquiring studios over time, right? And those studios have been, you know, working on things.
I think is going to be the most interesting thing to watch, because we know they have Halo. They've been working on Halo for a long time, and you can't get much bigger than Halo. Like, even on the PlayStation side, there's not many of their guns that can, like, you know, equal out to the behemoth that is Halo. Mm-hmm. And, like, I know that Halo's kind of dipped in the last couple years compared to some earlier entries, but I feel like it's been long enough, and this is being kind of touted as a big enough semi-reboot, you know?
Yeah.
Whether or not it is, like, story-wise or whatever, just in terms of people's mm-hmm. minds, that I think that there's a lot of good juice going there. I wonder what that's going to look like for PlayStation. How do you fight Halo? Or do you not?
Yeah.
Do they launch without Horizon? Because I don't think that Horizon is going to beat Halo, right? Do you let Halo just kind of happen? Do you let
the
end of the year have that moment? And then come next year, 2021, where it could be Horizon, Spider-Man, IP we don't know about yet.
I do think Halo speaks specifically to the Xbox audience in a way that Horizon speaks to a wider audience. Like, Halo is very much like people who have come up with PlayStation are going to see Halo and be like, "Ooh, man, I might want to jump ship," in a way that people will see like something like Horizon or something like Spider-Man or whatever the you know, future exclusive titles for PlayStation, you know, in the upcoming years might be. I feel like those have more appeal, like a wider appeal than Halo, which is I feel like you're into Halo if you like Halo. I can't see somebody who hasn't been into Halo.
I don't think that that's not how it used to be. Mm-hmm. I feel like in the last generation, you're right, mm-hmm. but I feel like Xbox is trying to shed that and bring Halo back to being what it used to be, which was, ah, man, I don't have an Xbox. I need to buy an Xbox or borrow my friend's Xbox to play through at least the campaign of Halo.
Interesting.
You know, and
yeah.
There's another, like, massive thing here. Game Pass. They're trying to break down the barrier of entry for the people that are like, I'm a PlayStation guy,
mm-hmm.
to be like, I'd be crazy to not give this a shot. If it's good. If it is mm-hmm. what it needs to be.
If it's more than Halo 5.
Exactly.
Right? Interesting.
Which I definitely think it's going to be. So, yeah, mm-hmm. it's going to be interesting to see how Sony comes back with this. But I think that Sony is in a better position to have exclusive after exclusive that are of top-tier quality.
Mm-hmm.
I think that Halo can beat out many of those. But right now, all they have is Halo. We know they have Hellblade coming at some point. I don't think that that's very soon. I don't think that they should be nice to each other. That's just, you know, kind of blowing your load way too early when you don't have banger after banger coming after that. Mm-hmm. We know they have all the studio acquisitions, but...
Mm-hmm. They have that Rare game that people kept tweeting us that, like, oh, yeah, this is the one we're talking about. I forget what it's called, though.
The one that
Everwild?
Looks like
is it Everwild?
Breath of the Wild.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It has that kind of art style, which I think could, you know, very well be a pretty good game. But we'll see.
We'll see.
Number two. The 23rd Annual DICE Awards finalists have been announced. This comes from interactive.org. The Academy of Interactive Arts and Sciences is pleased to announce the nominees for its 23rd DICE Awards. Co-hosted for the fourth time, or for the fourth year, by Jessica Chobot and Greg Miller.
Hate that guy.
Academy members will begin general voting for the video game industry's premier peer-juried awards show on Friday, January 10th at 5 p.m. Pacific time.
That's today.
That is today. The winners will be revealed at the DICE Awards ceremony on Thursday, February 13th at Aria Resort Las Vegas as a culmination of the week-long industry gathering at the 2020 DICE Summit. 65 games released in 2019 received nominations. Control and Death Stranding lead the nominees with 8 nominations each, followed by Disco Elysium and Call of Duty Modern Warfare, each earning 6 nods. Four nominations each include Outer Wilds and Untitled Goose Game, while Short Hike, Mortal Kombat 11, Resident Evil 2, and Sayonara Wild Hearts each received 3. Finalists for 2019's Top Honor Game of the Year are Control, Death Stranding, Disco Elysium, Outer Wilds, and Untitled Goose Game. I feel like Untitled Goose Game just sneaks in places, man.
Yo, real talk, man. That goose is a sneaky little bitch.
It is.
I don't understand what it is about Untitled Goose Game.
I don't
know. Video games are for many different people, and they vibe with some people, and they don't vibe with others, and I totally understand that. I am shocked at how many award nominations Untitled Goose Game is getting.
Dude, it's crazy.
I get, like, it is a unique idea, but... Man, this goes above and beyond my expectations for the goose. On the flip side, shout out to Disco Elysium.
Dude, Disco Elysium is killing it. I'm actually pretty happy. I haven't played Disco Elysium, and that's not even like my type of game. But I like the fact that game came out of nowhere. It is really like, you know, catching all these different nominations. I know there are people out there that love it. Like, I listen to the GameSpot podcast, and they rave about that game. And so, yeah, like, shout out to Disco Elysium. Shout out to Outer Wilds. That's another one that kind of came out of nowhere and is capturing a lot of hearts. I want to go through some of the finalists for some of the different categories, kind of like what we did with GDC. But let's roll through some of them. So we have Outstanding Achievement in Animation, which I kind of like that as a category. The finalists for that one are Call of Duty Modern Warfare, Days Gone, which I feel like is a surprising one. Days Gone hasn't really gotten any nods for any awards, I feel like, because, you know, that game didn't really hit as hard as I feel like people wanted it to. Death Stranding, Devil May Cry 5, and Luigi's Mansion 3. Which, would you have any picks for animation?
I mean, this is an unpopular opinion, but I wouldn't say Luigi's Mansion 3. I was talking about how much I didn't enjoy that in the game, but probably Devil May Cry 5 out of these.
See, I would say Death Stranding. I feel like
The facial stuff,
like the cutscenes for sure, but then also like the balancing stuff and the way your character kind of moves. I feel like that stuff is... like, it's pretty unique and translates well to like what you're doing in the game, and you kind of understanding what's going on.
Yeah.
And you understanding, like, you know, oh man, I'm leaning right.
Like, I'm leaning right, man.
I'm leaning right.
Yeah, no, for me, DMC5, just because, man, the RE engine is so gorgeous, and it just allows games to look a way that I've never seen before. And whether that is in motion, in lighting, or in the animation. So that's my nod.
We have Outstanding Achievement in Art Direction. The nominees, or the finalists, are Call of Duty Modern Warfare, Concrete Genie, Control, Death Stranding, and Resident Evil 2. Which my pick would be Control, even though I played some of Concrete Genie, like the first hour of Concrete Genie, and I want to get back to it. That game looks beautiful. I was not expecting that game to look as good as it did when I first booted it up. I was like blown away. And so I'm glad it's a finalist here.
I feel like Control's going to win.
Yeah. Control's art style is just super dope. It's my favorite thing about that game. We have Outstanding Achievement in Character. For that, we have Jesse Faden from Control, Cliff Unger from Death Stranding, Sam Porter Bridges from Death Stranding, Grease from Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order,
and
the Goose from Untitled Goose Game.
Yo. Okay.
This is a category. I love that Sam Porter Bridges and Cliff Unger, played by Norman Reedus and Mads Mikkelsen, are right next to Grease. Greasy money, baby.
Greasy motherfucking money,
and the
baby.
Goose.
Is this the only award that Fallen Order got nominated for? Because if so,
that's hilarious.
Like,
shout out to Grease, though, man. He's my boy. But
Grease,
I don't know that
awesome.
I'd give him Astounding Achievement.
Yeah, like,
character.
I would have gone with, like, Seer or the Night Sister.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Or like, even, like, the villain. What's her name? The 13th Sister?
The Second Sister.
Sister, yeah. Who's the 13th Sister?
You made that up.
There's not that many sisters.
Yeah, there's a ninth sister, though.
Yeah, okay. The ninth sister.
Yeah. The second sister, I feel like, is also a pretty good character.
Also,
but...
Goose? It's just a fucking goose.
No, man, you're not giving. See, that's where you're not giving the goose enough credit. The goose.
Okay.
Like, here's the thing. You need to grow up with Kevin Coelho to understand the complexity of the goose. He is the goose, guys. I don't know if you realize it. Just walking around, annoying the living fuck out of everybody.
Goose, I kind of understand in this category. Because I see that goose everywhere on social media. That goose is turned into a meme. That goose is turned into like a lifestyle. People are all about that goose. And so I can understand. I don't know how much of a character that goose. I guess like the goose is a pretty strong character.
It has character.
Yeah.
But Goose is like a poor man's Baby Yoda. I said it.
All right.
I'm not even saying don't at me. At me, you fucking cowards.
We have outstanding achievement in original music composition. The finalists are Arise, A Simple Story, Control, Erica, interesting, Golem, and Mortal Kombat 11. I played Erica. I don't remember the music in that game. I did not like that game.
I played Mortal Kombat 11. I don't remember the music in that game except for the song.
I'm surprised like Sayonara Wild Hearts isn't here.
Or Katana Zero.
Like, yeah. Katana Zero, I get because people like to overlook that game.
They really do enjoy it just being like, oh, that game.
Like, oh, Katana Zero came out in 2019?
Not enough Goose.
But like Sayonara Wild Hearts, I feel like people are all about, especially for that music. Outstanding achievement in audio design, the finalists are Call of Duty Modern Warfare, Death Stranding, Mortal Kombat 11, Resident Evil 2, and Sayonara Wild Hearts.
Okay.
So there you go. Which I would personally probably give to... We've had this conversation already, but I think I would give to Resident Evil 2. But I can see Call of Duty Modern Warfare winning that because of that E3 presentation they give. And because it's Call of Duty, and they're really good at that.
I'm interested in these categories. I like how different they are from GDC.
Yeah, and that's why I love, because video games, I feel like, are so hard to nail down category-wise, because, like, with movies, you know, it can separate them by genre, be like,
can
best
you,
comedy,
though?
Best...
I feel like the same issues happen there, right? The Martian's not a comedy.
True, but I've never been, like, a big fan of, like, the best action-adventure game, best action game, best RPG, because at a certain point, like, these genres mesh together so much that it becomes difficult to do. That's why I like, you know, Giant Bomb has their very unique categories where it's, like, best moment, right? And I don't think they did best moment this year, but usually they'll go with, like, best moment or best... I don't know, man. Best new character, best debut,
best Goose.
You know, best Goose, right? Like that type of stuff I enjoy because it makes things kind of easier to nail down. Even though like those categories are more a little bit goofy, but I like them. Then we have outstanding technical achievement, Call of Duty Modern Warfare, Concrete Genie, Control, Death Stranding, and Metro Exodus. Let's see. I'm not going to go through all these. I'm going to see.
Is there any other fun ones?
Yeah, that's what I'm looking through. Fighting Game of the Year is Dead or Alive 6, Jump Force, Mortal Kombat 11, and Samurai Showdown, which Jump Force keeps getting nominated for this category. Jump Force, I don't know if I would.
It's just because they like don't like they run out of fighting games to think of. They're like, oh, hey, there was that cool
anime one
that like seemed
real
cool
talk,
in those
though.
Trailers.
Those trailers look dope as fuck.
Dude, yeah, I was looking forward to Jump Force. I played it at PAX West. And I thought, like, when I played it, I played only for, like, 30 minutes. And from what I played, I was like, oh, this game seems like it's going to be really good. Like, I really enjoyed playing that game for 30 minutes. And I, like, I mean, the cast of characters in that game, you could use, like, Yusuke Urameshi and, like, Yu-Gi-Oh! And Dragon Ball. Like, Dragon Ball is a character, but, like, Goku and all that stuff. I thought that game was going to be great. Turns out, was not that great when it came out, which saddens me.
Can we look at Racing Game of the Year? Because I fucking love this.
Sure. Racing Game of the Year, we have Crash Team Racing Nitro Fueled, Dirt Rally 2.0, F1 2019, Mario Kart Tour, and Trials Rising.
Motherfucking Trials Rising, let's go.
Trials Rising is interesting. I wouldn't have thought about that one for racing
games. Not enough people played it. Technically, it is a racing game, but it's like a puzzle, like physics-based racing game, and it's fun as fuck, and more people need to play it.
Whoever played Mario Kart Tour on this list? Didn't play Mario Kart.
Yeah, somebody's missing
some
out on
ass motherfuckers. Also, I just want to say,
Team Sonic Racing.
It's not here, blessing. It's not here. I just want to say, I love that I live in a world that Crash Team Racing Nitro Fueled, like the Crash Team Racing, is back and is not only nominated for awards, has been winning awards. It won Best Racing Game for the Game Awards, and like some people can say, oh, it doesn't matter. I don't give a fuck. It won an award in 2019, man. The Vandekoot lives.
Crazy. I'm scrolling through, seeing if I can pick out any more interesting ones. Outstanding achievement for an independent game. We have A Short Hike, Disco Elysium, Sayonara Wild Hearts, Untitled Goose Game, and What the Golf. Which I've heard really good things about A Short Hike. The homie Alex Van Aken really liked that game. This one, I feel like Disco Elysium might just take it away because Disco Elysium is so beloved. But those are all good nominees. People need to acknowledge Katana Zero more, Barrett.
Right? Why are you looking at me like I'm not acknowledging it more?
I don't know. No. I meant to look at you like we're the ones.
You told me you're like not enough people acknowledge it, Barrett.
Yeah, you guys are teaming up.
But yeah, it's me and you
versus the world.
He's so used to getting shit from people here.
Yeah. I know. Like I'm fucking like all over the place. Like why are you looking at me? Look over there.
Outstanding achievement in game design, Baba Is You, Disco Elysium, Outer Wilds, Sekiro, Shadows Die Twice, and Slay the Spire. I can see any of those games getting it. All those games did really unique, really cool things that were successful. Let's see. And then let's just talk about Game of the Year. Control, Death Stranding, Disco Elysium, Outer Wilds, Untitled Goose Game.
It will be any of these, but not Goose Game.
Yep.
Like,
don't speak too soon, man.
Who knows what Game of the Year?
We said the same.
You're right.
We said
the
same for Sekiro.
Yeah, right, man. Jeez, I really hope Untitled Goose Game wins Game of the Year.
Oh my God. Frank Furter writes in and says, "Good morning, Blessing and Tim. The GDC award list has been revealed, and to no one's shock, Death Stranding leaves the list." for the most nominations with 7, with this award ceremony being decided based on the developer's vote rather than the consumers and media outlets. Do you think Death Stranding has a better shot at winning most of these awards, unlike the Game Awards? Thanks for all you do, Frank Furter.
I don't know, because you have to start getting into the psychology of that, of why you would assume that, because that would imply that they have played Death Stranding. Death Stranding is a very long game. Game developers don't have many hours in the day, right? However, they also see things we don't see, understand things differently.
Dude, I saw somebody who works for Naughty Dog. I think like somebody who works in development for Naughty Dog, right? Tweet about Death Stranding and talking about how Death Stranding is their game of the decade, because they're kind of saying that like the way that game kind of refines like its systems and its mechanics and the way everything kind of supports each other and comes together is like way more impressive than anything they've ever seen. And I read that and I was shocked. I love Death Stranding, but I never really thought about it as like this like technical mechanical masterpiece, right? I was just like, oh yeah, I like the balancing and I like the walking, but I never really like looked at it.
You like managing your load
that way? Yeah, managing the load.
Yep, you like that?
Yeah, I love that. Yeah. And so like, you know, I feel like since this is an award show that's voted on and looked at by developers, they see The Matrix more than we do.
Yeah.
So maybe The Matrix there is very impressive for Death Stranding.
Or The Goose.
Or The Goose.
They might see things we don't.
Number 3, Ubisoft Australia donates to Australian bushfire crisis. This comes from Steve Watts over at GameSpot. Australia has been suffering from deadly wildfires over the last few months, leading to the death of people and wildlife and the destruction of bush, forest, and parks. Ubisoft Australia stepped in with a contribution to help ease the crisis, with a note that explains its reasoning. A post on Twitter says that the company has donated $30,000 to the Australian Red Cross Disaster and Recovery Relief Fund. The note also says that the company has heard calls for in-game items to encourage donations, but it felt the development time for this effort would take too long for such an immediate problem. It suggests that those who feel so inclined should contribute directly to a relief organization, and in threaded replies links to reputable ones to consider. Ubisoft Australia is located just outside Sydney, the capital of New South Wales, where the wildfires have been among the most devastating. Evacuations have taken place across NSW, Victoria, and South Australia. Roughly 1,400 homes have been lost, and the human death toll stood at 25 as of January 6th, according to NPR. Experts have estimated that roughly 500 million animals have died in the fires as well, which that is saddening. Similarly, Ubisoft donated 500,000 euros, which is about $565,000, to assist in Notre Dame reconstruction efforts after a fire destroyed parts of the famous cathedral. It also gave away Assassin's Creed Unity for free on PC for a limited time following the disaster, which includes a very realistic virtual recreation of Notre Dame. And I added a note at the bottom of this that Bungie is also raising funds to help fight against the fire, along with an indie publisher, Creativo, who I think makes a game called The Universe Sim. And so, shout out to Ubisoft. Shout out to companies.
Yeah, man, a ton of different companies have been doing that. On top of that, a lot of streamers and a lot of different groups. I know Funhouse was just doing a big stream. Like they crossed 13K or something. I think they're still raising, but that's super impressive. I know Laserbeam, a streamer out in Australia, and a lot of his boys are raising a shit ton of money. I think that they crossed like a million or something.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
But I. You know, this is so sad and such a horrible situation. Like, dude, half a billion, man. 500 million animals dead.
That's
that
crazy.
Number is insane.
That's messed up.
But I love that we live in a world that allows for this type of charity to exist. Like, Ubisoft coming through and doing all that, that's great. But I love that because of streaming and because of platforms and just the way that media has changed, we don't need to wait for the news to tell us that there's a problem and that people need to act and like and help out if they can. People can just do things like Extra Life that are a bit more consistent. But when something comes up like this, it's like, hey, we're going to do a charity stream, we're going to raise money for this, and I think it's a great thing.
Yeah. Shout out to Ubisoft, shout out to Bungie, shout out to Creativo. Any other gaming company I missed. When I was doing my scroll through to find stories, Ubisoft was the first to come up, and then as I was scrolling more, I found the Bungie one and then the Creativo one. And so
I mean, it's even little simple things like, can you pull up IGN.com real quick?
Yeah.
But yeah, our hearts for sure go out to Australia, and I encourage people to check out places where they can go help out.
Also, I mean, right there, IGN.com, up at the top, they have this donate to fire relief. So just it's awesome. Cool stuff, man.
Awesome. Number four, Metacritic users rank top games of the 2010s decade. I'm pulling this from Steve Watts over at GameSpot. I believe that's the second from Steve Watts this episode.
Shout out to Steve.
Now that we've entered a new decade, we can safely look back at the last one. The ups, the downs, the pitting media franchises against each other in a 10-year battle royale for our love and plaudits, which I never heard the word plaudits before, but hey, you learn something new every day. Man. GameSpot sister site Metacritic. Wait, really? Are GameSpot and Metacritic like links?
Because it's CBS. CBS Interactive owns both of them.
I didn't realize CBS owned Metacritic. That's interesting. Recently conducted its user poll on the top games of 2019.
Do you know that IGN's company, Ziff Davis, mm-hmm. owns speedtest.net?
Wait, really?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
In a very, 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 very roundabout way, I helped with that deal.
Wow.
But anyways, continue.
Metacritic recently conducted its user poll on the top games of 2019, but also tabulated votes on the top games of the decade. The results are a who's who of masterpieces. The Last of Us took the top spot, and developer Naughty Dog accepted the honor with good grace in a tweet. It more than doubled the mentions of the second place finisher, The Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild. The Witcher 3, Wild Hunt, finished third. And then I have a link here, which we can go through a little bit. I'm not going to spend mm-hmm. too much time because we're deep in the show. But we have like a top 10 here of the decade, right? It goes The Last of Us, Breath of the Wild, Witcher 3. And this is user voted, right? This isn't just like Metacritic score. Last of Us, Breath of the Wild, number 2. Witcher 3, number 3. And at number 4, we have Red Dead Redemption 2. Number 5, Mass Effect 2. Number 6, Bloodborne. Number 7, The Elder Scrolls 5, Skyrim. Number 8, God of War. Number 9, Grand Theft Auto 5. And number 10 is Dark Souls. And that's of the decade.
What a fucking list, man.
Dude, that's a strong list.
That's a strong list. And I also think that it's varied enough where it does kind of speak to different types of gamers. Like that, that to me is a very solid, good list. Of course, there are a bazillion games of the last decade that deserve to be some mentioned and debatably are on that list. But I don't think anybody can deny that those 10.
Oh, yeah. Like, those 10 are all, like, iconic games, right? Like, 10 years from now, people are going to look back and be like, oh, yeah, those were the games that defined this decade.
Very cool.
And then they also have, like, the list of the user-voted list for 2019, which I'll go through real quick. Is number 1, Resident Evil 2. Number 2, Sekiro Shadows Die Twice. Number 3, Death Stranding. Number 4, Fire Emblem Three Houses. Number 5, Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order. Number 6, The Outer Worlds. Number 7, Control. Number 8, Devil May Cry 5. Number 9, Luigi's Mansion 3. And number 10, Pokemon Sword and Shield.
Sorry, that was for
2019.
What was number 1?
Resident Evil 2.
Cool.
Yeah. Resident Evil 2. A game that should have gotten way more awards.
Me too, man. Me too.
Came out too early. You know?
Watch our Game of the Year games cast. We go into all of our thoughts for 3 hours.
Three whole hours.
3 great hours, man.
Number 5. There are new Resident Evil 3 details from official PlayStation Magazine.
Hell yeah. What
I'm pulling
a segue.
This from Reddit user Mates 20970.
Hold on. From official PlayStation Magazine?
I didn't know that was a thing.
OPM still exists?
Yeah.
What?
Yep. And so they put out their, or I don't know if they put out their issue, if this leaked. I didn't have time to like figure all that out. But essentially they have like in their magazine, they go into some details about, official PlayStation Magazine right there. They go into detail about some of the details of Resident Evil 3, some of the new details of Resident Evil 3. And Reddit user Mates 20970 bullet pointed them, and so I'm just going to go through his Reddit post and read out the bullet points. So he says, you shouldn't expect an exploration of Raccoon City like in an open world game, but there will be plenty of exploration in many areas of the city. First bullet point, Nemesis will use an improved version of the AI developed for the Tyrant of Resident Evil 2 remake. Sound will be very important in a city like Raccoon City. You will have to rely on it to anticipate dangers lying in wait around the corner. Confirmation that we will visit the streets, the shops, the Stagla petrol station, the raccoon press offices, in the hospital. Nemesis was created in real life to be able to be scanned via photogrammetry.
What the fuck does that mean?
I have no idea what that means.
I know that it means that they probably just made like a model to be scanned, but I also love the idea that like it was Nemesis was created in real life. They took got a bunch of scientists together to create a fucking monster.
I see what he means now. Mercenaries mode will not return. Have you played Resident Evil 3?
Yeah, RE3. Yeah.
Okay. So you know what all this means.
Oh yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Gotcha. You never beat it?
I didn't beat RE3. RE3 was one that I rented a whole bunch.
Gotcha. The mutant worms will be back. I don't know what that means. I haven't played it, so I'm just like looking at these words. Like, I hope this makes sense. Carlos will be playable. There will not be the action choice mechanism as in the original, which could give different sequences of the game afterwards or an advantage over a danger. And then last bullet point, there will also be no more endings.
The game just won't end.
There won't be multiple endings.
Okay. It will therefore be interesting to know who will fly the helicopter. Oh, I'm not going to get into the ending.
Yeah. There's like some RE2 and 3, and I mean even 1 to an extent if I remember correctly, had different scenarios that depending on whose plot you did first. So I guess RE1 had this as well. Whose plot you did first like would change elements of the story. Even RE2. Did you beat both sides of RE2?
No, I only beat Leon.
So depending on who you do first in the original one would change some actions and some narrative points so that people would always debate, like, what's canon? Oh, okay. And so it's like people be like, oh, Claire B, Leon A, or whatever it is. Like, that is what most people accept as canon. I'm pulling that out of my ass. But, like, I forgot exactly what the line was, and there was a similar thing in 3.
Gotcha. Interesting. Do all those details sound good to you, Tim?
This sounds great. Awesome. I mean, like the mercenaries mode not returning. Like, I don't really care about multiplayer.
Oh,
those
mercenaries.
It's the multiplayer stuff. Okay. Like,
I mean, they have like a different multiplayer mode, right, for Resident Evil 3.
Yeah.
The whole.
Wait, was mercenaries mode the multiplayer? Or was that the thing where it's like the arcade score thing? Either way, I have said this a million times. I want to get to a point, especially moving into the next gen where there's the Game Pass type situations going on. If you're going to make an awesome single player campaign, make an awesome single player campaign. If you're going to make an awesome multiplayer game, make an awesome multiplayer game. They don't need to both be in the same
game. And I feel
like
we got to that point with this generation, right? Like in PS3.
We're getting close.
Like PS3, I feel like we got a lot of single player games with like multiplayer modes that just weren't all that. But we also like got a few that really did work out, like Last of Us multiplayer.
But Last of Us to me is a perfect example. Mm-hmm. What seems like the direction they're going is how I want people to be doing this. Make Last of Us 2, make it a standalone thing, and then make Last of Us multiplayer a standalone thing. Make people care more about that, right? Like, I feel like if you were to make the multiplayer part of a game, if you really give a shit about it and like want to push it and make it good and you make it its own thing, more people are going to care, which means that that game is going to thrive longer than if it's just another mode in a game.
Gotcha. Tim, motherfucking Geddes.
Yeah.
Resident Evil 3, so far away.
No, it's not.
It's so
That's
far away.
That's a lie. It's so it's, close.
Is it, though? It's what, we have 3 months? The months are long. Is this a leap year? No?
Maybe.
Is it? I don't know what
you're doing. You want me to look it up?
Right,
look
it's
up.
Long. It's so far
look
away.
Look it up, Barrett.
It's a leap year.
Wait, this year's a leap year? Did I get that right?
It is.
I just guessed. It is a leap year.
There's 3 leap. Yeah, it's a leap year.
3 leap years in this decade.
Okay.
Long ass decade.
Wow.
In this decade, there's 3 leap years.
In 2020.
Dude, everybody's been ranking games of the decade. I want to rank leap years of the decade.
Dude, let's do it, man.
Let's go, dude.
Yo, we can make it happen.
Hell yeah.
But if I wanted to know where I could go to figure out what's coming to the mom and grop shops today, where would I go?
The official list of upcoming software across each and every platform is listed by the Kinda Funny Games Daily Show host each and every weekday.
Yeah.
Oh, man, you had some soul to that
Yeah,
shit.
Man. Hey, man, I'm awake this morning.
Woo!
It took a minute for me to get there, but I'm wide awake now.
You there, man.
I'm wide awake.
Out today, we have Craftica. Sorry, the text is small, so I had to like really look at what my was written here.
Good luck on this one.
For PC and Mac. We have Aborigines.
Aborigines.
It sounds like Aboriginal. On Switch. We have Technosphere on Switch. Drunk Foo, Wasted Masters on
Barrett,
Switch.
Get on
yeah,
it.
Yeah, Barrett, we need to know. We have Orbit Blazers on PC, Coffee Break on PC, the Blind Prophet on PC, Dusk Warlocks on PC, Angry Food on PC, and Excel X on PC.
That's Excel X sounds like a game that Greg Miller would be making fun of PC players for.
Oh, 100%.
So we are about to look at Drunk Fu Wasted Masters on the Switch.
Put this up.
Not looking promising.
Really? So far, I'm into this.
This looks like
Okay, never mind. This looks like
Oh man, this looks like shitty Power Stone.
What's Power Stone? Is that something I should know?
You know, here's the thing. I'm not going to shame you for not knowing it because honestly, I shame Sega for not Capcom for not doing better with Power Stone. I always associate Power Stone with Sega because of the Dreamcast and because
Was it a Dreamcast game?
Yeah.
Okay.
And it was mainly an arcade game.
Ew.
Think Smash Brothers, but 3D.
Oh.
Fantastic cast of characters. Insane. Power Stone is a classic, but man, they did not show that franchise enough love.
Interesting.
A lot of people in the chat are saying Blushing should be fired for asking that question.
Wow, is Power Stone really that?
I guess so.
It's culty. It's
well, you know what? Again, it's you and me versus the world because I had no idea what the fuck Power Stone
was.
Yeah,
I thought that was like a Nickelodeon show from back in the day.
Yeah.
Like one of
Power
the game
Stone
shows
is awesome,
where you get slimed after you lose.
Figure it out.
Yeah, man. Deals of the day. Gilly Brums writes in and says, Happy Friday, blessing Tim. Another hot deal coming in this week on Target.com, a digital code of Cuphead for Switch is only $9 as of writing, a little over 50% off the original retail price. Deals on the Switch version have been pretty few and far between since it released last April, so if any best friends are looking to eventually grab Cuphead on Switch, this is one of the best deals I've seen. This discount is seemingly part of a big New Year sale that Nintendo started this week. A boatload of discounts recently hit the eShop, and discounts on digital codes are also live at most of the major retailers. Check those eShop wish lists to see if anything you're interested in is marked down.
You know what I started last night again? Tim Gettys on the Switch, because I was like taking a break. I want to take when I beat a Zelda game, I want to take like at least like a week or two break in between when I start the next one.
Hey, what did you say you started?
I was getting to it.
Oh, okay. I thought you already said it.
So we're watching stand-up last night, and I'm in my bed, and I want to play something. And I started up a little bit of that Cuphead.
Hell yeah, you did. We did the Game of the Year conversation. We gave a lot of honorable mentions. Mm-hmm. I was trying so hard to find a way to be able to finagle an excuse to talk about Cuphead on Switch, and it just didn't make sense. Mm-hmm. But my thing is, I had such a great time playing Cuphead this year on Switch. The game ran so well on Switch. It belongs... It just feels at home there, man. Have you played Cuphead?
I played Cuphead, not on Switch. I never beat Cuphead.
Yeah, it's so
good. I got to the dragon with the three heads, and I lost so much to the point where I can't do this anymore.
Dude, here's the thing, Barrett.
It's so fun.
We got DLC coming, man.
And
at this point, it must be soon.
I mean, we've been saying that for, what, 2 years?
Well, yes, but here's my thing. It's this year. It has to be this year.
Okay. All right.
And I'm feeling good about it.
I'm feeling good about it, too. Yeah, I got through halfway through the second island last night, so I was feeling good. God,
isn't that nice, though? Like, when you come back to Cuphead and you start and, playing the first bosses, it's like, steamrolling
these stupid-ass frogs.
No, like the big blue guy was, like, kind of kicking my ass, because I always forget, like, how, like, far he jumps.
He's
and,
very
like,
elastic.
Yeah, that's a perfect word, Tim.
Now it is time for reader mail. You can write into patreon.com/kindoffunnygames, where you can get the show ad-free. And speaking of ads, this episode of Kind of Funny Games Daily is brought to you by Mint Mobile.
Mm-hmm.
If you're still using one of the big wireless providers this year, have you asked yourself what you're paying for? Between expensive retail stores, inflated prices, and hidden fees, you're being taken advantage of because they know you'll pay. Enter Mint Mobile. Mint Mobile provides the same premium network coverage you're used to, but at a fraction of the cost because everything is online. Mint Mobile saves on retail locations and overhead, then passes those savings directly to you. Tim, you got this for your mom, right?
I did, man. It made things so much easier. My mom, very difficult woman to deal with when it comes to the technology. She doesn't understand a lot of the stuff, but this was super easy. Being able to, like, let me put it this way. For years, I've struggled trying to get her phone situation set up that were simple and easy, that she understood how to pay it and like get everything done in the right times, and she would mess it up constantly, and it always end up coming out of my wallet.
Oh,
this Mint Mobile stuff made it super easy. $15 a month. She's getting her unlimited calls to me, which, you know, has its pros and cons. but at the end of the day, made it super easy for me, and I'm very thankful for them.
Mint Mobile makes it easy to cut your wireless bill down to just $15 a month. Every plan comes with unlimited nationwide talk and text. With Mint Mobile, stop paying for unlimited data you'll never use. Choose between plans with 3, 8, or 12 gigabytes of 4G LTE data. Use your own phone with any Mint Mobile plan and keep your same phone number along with all your existing contacts. That's nice, having the same contacts, because we're in 2020. Could you imagine losing all your contacts in 2020?
Yeah.
It's not 2020 vision right there.
Nah,
man. That's 2019 vision.
Oh, man.
Yeah, man.
Ditch your old wireless bill and start saving with Mint Mobile. To get your new wireless plan for just $15 a month and get the plan shipped to your door for free, go to mintmobile.com/games. That's mintmobile.com/games. Cut your wireless bill down to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/games. Torbenok writes in and says, good morning, blessing
strong
and Tim.
Strong name.
Right? Such a strong name. Sounds like a Ragnarok, but like a different version. Torbenok is the second coming of Ragnarok. Capcom has revealed that the new Resident Evil 3 won't have multiple endings like the original, but that Carlos will have an expanded role, and Nemesis has been made even more terrifying. Able to wander the whole Raccoon City freely as well as use weapons. How ready is everyone at KF for this new remix, and do you think it will be as good as RE2 was? Keep crushing it in 2020, and I hope to see everyone at the studio launch. From Will/Torbnok.
I am extremely ready. I don't think I could be more ready. I cannot believe it's coming this soon. Well, do I think it'll be as good as RE2 Remake? I hope. I don't think it will, though. I think that really? RE2 was tighter of an experience. And there's a reason I beat RE2 and I didn't beat RE3. And if I did, I don't remember beating RE3. Mm-hmm. So that's not good, right? I feel that RE3 kind of retread a lot of the same areas and space that RE2 did. And like it tried some different things. It brought Jill back, which was cool. I was never a huge fan of Carlos. But I think that this remake has an opportunity to fix all of those problems, and I think that retreading the areas that we did in RE2 won't feel as whatever as it did on the original PlayStation because it's so close to RE2 that it'll feel kind of just more like a continuation from last year. And that's my thing, man. I feel like Capcom, if this game is as good as we expect it to be, and we have no reason to think it won't be, they deserve some type of, like, shout-out. Award.
Oh,
like,
dude.
Get high
Capcom
moment.
Deserves, like, the, like, if there's an award
the
for
comeback
best,
of
yeah,
the,
like, best glow up.
Yeah, dude.
From the beginning of this gen to now,
it's
ridiculous.
Even just looking at RE2, man, like, last year, they released RE2. Mm-hmm. It was actually amazing. In Game of the Year conversations, my game of the year. And then within a year, they announced the sequel's coming out.
Yeah.
What, 14, 15 months after RE2?
It's ridiculous.
This has to be some type of record for a AAA game of this caliber to be getting a sequel in for these this generation. Mm-hmm. This feels like how back in the day, like to think back to PlayStation 1 when we got Final Fantasy 7, 8, and 9, when we got Resident Evil 1, 2, and 3. It's like,
oh, yeah.
You know, we just don't get that anymore. It's more of like a one, maybe two, a generation, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm super excited for RE3. As somebody who, I was never a big Resident Evil person, and Resident Evil 2 was my first, like, really, like, my dive into Resident Evil. I absolutely loved it, and it's one of those things where I played it, and I was like, okay, I get it now. I get why there's Resident Evil love out there, because this game is incredible. I tried playing Resident Evil 4, but I tried it way too late, and I don't really think that game aged as well. Like, it has, like, the... I think it has tank controls, right? RE4?
No, RE4 doesn't. Now, I'm shocked that RE4 didn't vibe with you, but I also I do get it to a point just because I feel like RE4 aged very gracefully last gen, but coming back from it this many gens away, it might be there's too many new mechanics that have like phased out. Because like, even going back to Halo, like recently I was like I popped it in Halo 1 just to like mess around, and like not having aim down sights is so weird. But, like, you wouldn't expect that last gen.
I think for me it specifically, like, is a controls thing. Because I remember, because I've tried going back to RE4, like, multiple times, right? And the first time was probably, like, 2009-ish, 2010-ish. Mm-hmm. Actually, it's probably more like 2010-ish, 2011-ish. Because I tried going back to it on Wii. And I actually got, like, probably, like, a few hours into it on Wii. And I didn't hate it. I was like, okay, this, like... I don't love like aiming the Wiimote, you know, and using that as like my for my shooting mechanics, because at a certain point I'm like my arm gets tired and from holding it up so long. But you know, there I was like, okay, this is kind of fun. But then I tried going back to it again on PS4. I couldn't do it. I think I tried it on It came to Switch, right?
It did come
I might have had it on Switch,
ago,
too.
Yeah.
I couldn't do it. But
RE4 is a straight-up masterpiece. But I think that now that RE2 Remake is out, RE2 Remake, I said this when it first came out, is now my favorite RE. I think it is the best RE. And I never would have believed we'd see an RE4 Remake.
Mm-hmm.
I do now. I would have never thought we'd get a 3 remake.
Dude, I'd be into that. I'd love a RE4 Remake because I feel like that'd be the thing that would bring me in. Because I think for me, I think the big thing for me is having played Last of Us. And I feel like those games are sort of similar in style in terms of like the behind the back. And RE4, if correct me if I'm wrong, I feel like RE4 was the first game to really do like that perspective of up close, behind the back.
Of that close? Yeah, I mean, definitely to that quality level for sure.
Yeah, and I feel like having other games come out, you know, do sort of a similar thing, but better and more modernized, because Last of Us came out in 2013. I think that made it kind of harder for me to kind of go back to RE4, but if they made a remake, I'd be 100% in.
Mm-hmm.
I'm in for RE3, right, having never played the original RE3. So I'm super excited about this. I'm excited about the whole Nemesis thing. Like, the thing about RE2 that I loved, but that, like, I also hated at the same time, but not hated in a bad way, hated it in a good way, was Mr. X kind of just appearing and just being in that same space as you for a while. Like, that to me was terrifying in a game that was already terrifying.
Yeah, three has even more, man.
Yeah.
Three gets, like, real fucking crazy.
Yeah, and the idea that he's going to be there in, like, I assume a bigger map from what I'm hearing.
Yeah. It's the city this time.
That's terrifying.
Yeah, no, it's pretty crazy. You know, one of the biggest disservices, I think, that happened in the last 6 months to me in video games is the fact that RE3 leaked. I feel like Capcom shouldn't have talked about Project Resistance at all, leading into, what was it, TGS, I think.
Mm-hmm.
They shouldn't have done that, and they should have controlled the leaks a bit better, because if we didn't know this game was coming, and PlayStation did that state of play, and it just ended with freaking RE3 Remake, and it's coming in April, people would have lost their goddamn minds and would have been saying the state of play is god tier. But instead it leaked, and everyone's like, whatever. State of play sucks.
Yeah.
Boo.
Tyler from NYC writes and asks, or it says, I've been thinking about something that Blessing mentioned on Gamescast. Will we ever get an Outer Worlds game with the movement and fluidity like Apex Legends? Why do a lot of RPGs feel like you're a brick? I'd really enjoy one that had buttery smooth controls like Apex. Thanks and keep up the good work. And so what Tyler's referencing here is on Gamescast, I kind of talked about Apex Legends being my game of the year for last year. And like one of the reasons is I feel like mechanically, like, all the things they add in Apex Legends, as far as like the movement, the sliding, the how good, like the even just the mantling feels, like whenever you move in that game, it feels so nice and fluid in a way that kind of ruined other games for me this last year. Right. Being Wolfenstein Youngblood, I hated that movement didn't feel as good. Mm-hmm. Borderlands 3, the same thing. And I referenced Outer Worlds. Right. Because in that game, you can't mantle, you can't slide, you can't do any of those.
It feels very clunky.
Yeah, it feels very clunky, but also it's an RPG, and so you kind of excuse it for that because the game's not necessarily about that mechanical movement. But even still, like, as a first-person game with shooting mechanics, I still, in my brain, have to judge it on, not on that level, but on with that in mind, right?
Yeah.
With that in mind, that it does not feel as good to move as other first-person games that I've played. And so... Why do a lot of RPGs feel like you're a brick? I imagine the complexity, you know, of the world.
There's so many different systems in the back end.
Yeah, there's so much going on that it's just hard to really, like, take into account all these different moving parts as far as, like, you know, questing and how does this quest over on this in this location over here connect to the way somebody does something on the other side of the world. Like, I saw a great tweet from a developer of The Outer Worlds, and they were talking about a glitch that they were having where your companion would die. And this thread is awesome because he kind of goes into like their process of figuring out, like, okay, this is the glitch. We had it happen once in development where your companion would die, and your companion's not supposed to die on any playthrough that is not the hardest mode of the game. I forget what it's called, but there's a mode in the game that's supposed to be like the realistic hard mode. That's the mode where your companion in Outer Worlds is supposed to die. People's companions are dying in like normal and other difficulties, right? Mm-hmm. And so what it came down to was them getting more reports of people having that happen after they released the game, and them trying to figure out like what is going on. What it was in the ship, somebody. If you start a conversation, if if an NPC, if one of your companions starts like doing an action, they have like a switch that like allows them to like start that action and then stop that action. Mm-hmm. And that same that action was or that was connected to your companion's climbing, right? And so like if your companion goes to climb a ladder, that's a switch, boom, right? And for your companion to get off the ladder, that's also a switch.
Okay.
When you start a conversation in the world, I believe it's supposed to turn off switches, like those switches for your companions, right? So your companions aren't supposed to go crazy while you're in conversations. What would happen is on the ship, you would if you started a conversation with your companion while you had a companion that was climbing a ladder, the companion would keep climbing and climbing and climb past the ladder and then climb into space because the second switch was disabled.
Right.
And so once you stop talking to whoever you're talking to in the ship, your companion would then just plummet to Earth and die, right? And damage from like guns and all that stuff is supposed to be turned off while you're in conversation, but they didn't really account for. I don't think they accounted for fall damage, and so that's how your companion would end up dying. And that took them, I think, like months to figure out because they just couldn't nail down why.
You just gotta look up. Sometimes you just gotta look. Oh, they're up there.
Yeah, like dude, if you go find the thread, I don't know how I could like put that thread out there for people, but. Go see if you can find the thread because the thread is amazing to read through because you realize like, oh, video game development is hard. And so it's stuff like that, right? That type of systematic complexity
and stuff
mixed
like that.
With like the mechanical complexity, right? It's hard to really nail down.
Yeah. And to add like really fluid first person shooter gameplay on top of that would be a challenge within itself.
Yeah.
As
like
well.
Apex Legends is as mechanically complex as it is because that it's not doing as much systemically as an RPG like Fallout or Outer Worlds, right? Or any other like first person, like huge world, like exploration, conversation trees RPG. But that is why, you know, Outer Worlds doesn't feel as great to move around in as these other games, just because they're doing two different things. And so, like, you know, I acknowledge that, like, my complaint about Outer Worlds not necessarily feeling as good to move around in, you know, they have an excuse, right? And, like, you know, I don't fault them for that. But it's also one of those things where I feel like mantling, you know, just the simple act of mantling and be able to, like, climb over walls if you jump onto a wall, that goes such a long way into making that game just feel better. That one thing would kind of, you know, uplift that game a lot for me, right? Like Borderlands 2 didn't have mantling. Borderlands 3, they added it in, and that alone for me, like, I feel like went a long way into making that game feel better for me to play.
Yeah.
Question for you, Blessing.
Yeah.
We playing Borderlands 3 tonight? What's up?
I think I'm playing Peace Walker tonight.
Ah, lame.
I mean, I could play Borderlands 3 tonight.
We can play
Friday.
We got a weekend.
I don't have to go to bed early tonight.
We got a weekend, dude. Like,
yeah,
fucking,
we have a whole weekend.
I'll text you, man.
Dude, let's play some Borderlands 3. Now it's time to squad up. We don't have a squad up, and so it's not time to squad up. Let's get into kindoffunny.com/you'rewrong.
I got them all kind of prepped here for us. DJ Brad Chill wrote in and said, the One X only has the Xbox branding etched at the top of the console. No One X. By the way, I was the one who wrote in about One X being the lesser Xbox. So there you go.
Boom.
Kebabs are just in with horrifying news. A full billion animals have died.
Oh, what?
Yeah.
Oh.
Lord of Pwn says, yes, it is a leap year.
Nice.
And Tundra Boy says, Mercenaries in the original RE3 was not multiplayer. The first game in the series to have multiplayer Mercenaries was 5. Mercenaries was very similar to the fourth Survivor Tofu modes in RE2, where you had to reach a destination with limited resources and would be ranked based on time of kills. So it is the arcadey thing that I was talking about. That
gotcha.
I never vibed with. I didn't. I get that it was in there for kind of replay value. But even with the remake, I popped in, I tried it for a little bit, and with the hunk and all that stuff, I didn't like it. Didn't enjoy it at all. And then Corey Cudney coming in clutch here. Here's the obsidian thread you were talking about, Bless.
Perfect. Sweet. I might tweet that.
Yeah. Bless, tweet it out. Go check out twitter.com/blessingjr. Blessing Jr.
Blessing,
right?
Yeah. Blessing, Blessing Jr. So
yes.
Blessing Jr.
Yes.
But the Jr. is Jr. Next week's hosts are, on Monday, it's me and Tim.
Woo!
On Tuesday, it's me and Imran.
Hell yeah.
On Wednesday, it's me and Gary.
Yeah, it is.
On Thursday, it's me and Fran. And on Friday, it's Greg and me. I promise I'm not going to be hosting this show every single day. But I think for the first few weeks, you know.
Hey, I mean, we hired you as a host.
I mean, yeah.
We don't know what else you're going to be doing
We wanted to run you through, like, all the different hosts and all.
Yeah, we got to get those chemistries
exactly.
up. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
We're trying to raise your stats
right now. You and Gary is already a classic couple. So
oh, yeah.
It's just going to be exciting to see you guys do that again.
Barry.
Yeah. Barry.
That's
like
me
that.
And Gary's name.
Oh, I love it. Yeah, okay, I love it. Dude, Gary, I feel, is the most valuable member of the team because and anyone is OTP.
Fire.
You know what I mean?
Of course.
It's just great.
But yeah, if you're out there and you're like, I can't stand Blessing's voice, or like I'm tired of this dude. You know, he was all right for the first week, but the second week I'm getting sick of him. Don't worry, I'm not gonna be here every single day. Maybe we'll see. Depends.
Again, really, why are you looking
call.
At me? Really, like I'm the one I'm saying these things.
I don't know why I'm looking at you. I'm just saying, Barrett.
It's us versus the world.
Stay tuned for the post show if you're on Patreon and looking forward to that. Until next time, it's been our pleasure to serve you.
Hell yeah, it has.